begin the current daf, Masech the Sukkah, daf Chaf Aleph. We begin 5 lines down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, we began the second perek, and the Mishnah introduced a machlekes regarding sleeping underneath a bed in the Sukkah. Would that be a problem of that you're not in the oil of the Sukkah, rather you're in the oil of the bed? Now, one of the opinions mentioned in the Mishnah was that of Rabbi Huda, who held that it's not a problem. You're allowed to sleep underneath a bed that's within the Sukkah, and that, for some reason, will not be considered an oil. Will then interrupt your being in the greater oil, that of the Sukkah, and one will fulfill his chid. Now, related to that, which the Gemara later on will tie together how that relates to our Mishnah, the Gemara introduced the Mishnah Masechtas Alos, which mentioned Machlokes again with Rabbi Yehuda, where again in qualifications of what is considered an oil, Rabbi Yehuda held that an oil that's not made by Bnei Adam, in other words, with intended purpose by a human to make an oil, it will not have a halach of oil. So therefore, if let's say it was made naturally through running water or other ways like that through an animal, or even if a man's going to make it, however, not with distinct intention for it to be an oil. For example, if you have piles of beams, that there's just going to be a cavity of an oil of a tefach, that will not have the halachic criteria of an oil. Hence, if there's a kazayis of a mess on one side of that and a different object on another side of that, will not have the tumas of oil to transmit tumah to that object. Now the Gemara continues on that and asks, "V'sav Rabbi Yehuda, is it really true the way we were explaining Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah Masechtas Alos that kol oil sheino osa b'di adam ein oil? Is it really true that he holds that any oil, any tent, any enclosed area that's not made with intention by a bnei adam to be an oil does not have a halachic status of oil to transmit tuma?" But Rabbi Yehuda, seems to be a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda's opinions from the Mishnah Masechtas Par. The Mishnah says as follows. There were courtyards that were built in Yerushalayim, agabe hasela, on top of bedrock, which means to say that it's hard floor, like rock. It means there was nothing probably ever here. V'tachteyem chalul, and underneath the courtyards, in spite of the fact that they were building the courtyards on bedrock, which means that probably there's nothing that was ever dug up over here, buried over here, still, underneath that those courtyards was a chalul, was space, and they built on top of these beams. And the reason why they did this was when they kever hatoim, was because of what's called the kever of the depth. Now, Rashi explains, wherever it mentions in Shas, kever hatoim, the grave of the depth, or tumas hatoim, the tumah of the depth, it's a terminology of doubt. In other words, just like the depth are not revealed, we don't know what's beneath the ground. So too, we're talking about in reference to this, we call it kever hatoim. There's a doubt regarding if there's a grave here. That is, the entire city is in doubt if there's a grave. Now, if there is a grave, and moreover, from the dead body, there is not a space, a bubble of ear, of an ear space, of at least a tefach, then that would be what's called tumaritzutza, which means it's a crouching, it's a closed tumma. Hence, such a tumma, if there's not an ear space from the body to either the coffin or the ground, then there's going to be, that tumma will go up to the sky, will continue going upwards. And therefore, anyone that's walking over that ground will become tummy. Now, therefore, they would build, besides that they tried doing on bedrock, which would say that there was no grave there in the first place, but still there's that, still that possibility. So they built on top of archways, that even had there been a grave there, there's still that ear space which interrupts and then says that it only goes up until that, but it doesn't go beyond those arches up to where the courtyard is, where the people are walking on top of that. Now, after that they built this type of courtyards, then the Mavin Nashin Ubris, then they would bring pregnant women, the Yoldisham, and they would give birth in these courtyards, Umagadlas B'neim Sham Lapar, and they would give birth, and they would grow, they would bring up their children over there for the halachas of Paraduma. Now, the reason why we're talking about such drastic precautions for the halachas of tumah, and because as the Mishnah says in Masechtas Parah and Paragimel, says that they would be metame the kohen who is going to burn the paraduma, and then immerse him in the mikveh right away, and then have him do the avodah of the paraduma before sundown. Now the reason why they did this was because of the great threat that the tzedukim posed, that they said that no, you have to be tahar to do the avodah of burning the paraduma, doing all the avodah, and therefore you have to wait for sundown. Now, since the halacha is that we wanted to show to the contrary, we're even going to make him tameh, then immerse him, then have him do it before sundown, which is called a tful yoyim. Now, since that's some type of a laxity in the halachas of tumah, that he's not totally tar for every halacha, he's called a tful yoyim, which is good enough to do the avodah paraduma. So they made a lot of milas, a lot of takonis, so that one should not come to disgrace and be mezalzel the halachas of paradum and say, oh, relax with the halachas of paradum, we see it could be a tefil yoyim. So they made all these precautions and fences that regarding the halachas of paraduma. First of all the types of utensils and vessels they would use was either made out of dung or stone or earth, which are not makabel tumah. Moreover, the kohen who was going to burn it had to be separated for 7 days beforehand. His brothers, the kahanim, were not able to touch him, as the Gemara says in Masechtas Yom in the beginning, that you would spray him for 7 days. And they would misakan all these takanas, as the Gemara later on brings from this Mishnah Masechtas Para, that these children who were brought up, that they were never possible to ever have had tumah in their lives, because their mothers came to these places which cannot feasibly have tumah, and they were only born over there, that then they would bring these children to then draw the water, to then use that water for the water that was used for the ashes that were mixed with the water which was sprayed on the person that was tamei, which is called the mechatas. And again, because of these milas, that they should be tar from all types of tumah, they had to take all these different precautions in the structure and the fact of how it was built. Now, in Tosefta is actually brought that these children were only up until age 7 or 8, which they didn't want to reach age 9, which then they could possibly have seen carry, which is a similar mission, which that we can't avoid their tumah because it's not from external, it's from internal. So they would do all these different precautions. Now, finally, they had these children. They were under 9 years old. It was almost impossible for them to ever have become tamei. Then they would bring oxen. When they wanted to go take the children to go finally to the place where they were able to draw the water, because it had to be special water, mayim chayim, had to be live spring water, which was from the shiloach, so it would bring oxen. And on top of the oxen were doors. Now the reason for that was that it should make some type of a separation as an oil to separate between, even if there's possibly some tumah along the way, that the door should separate between the child and the tumah. And the children would sit on top of those doors which are on top of the oxen. And they had stone cups in their hands, as we explained before. Everything that they did were the utensils that could not even be makabel tumah, even if it touched tumah. When they reached the waters of the Shiloach, the children would then go down into the water and fill up the water. Now, and the reason is because this Tana holds, not like the next Tana we're going to quote, that the filling up the water had to be actually going down into the water. You can't just lower it down with a string, which would have been the more optimum way, so that they're not exposing themselves, the children, to tumah when they're going down. But this Tana held that you had to go down. Then they would come up from the water and sit there, and then they would go back and they would bring the water with the successful mission of getting the tahar water. Now Rabbi Yossi says, no, that the children would stay in their place on top of the doors. They would lower it down. And the reason why they would do that, which as we said before, is better, because he holds, obviously, you don't have to go down, because there might be tumah over there when the children are coming down, and then they'll become vulnerable to that tumah. Therefore, it's better that they stay up and lower down the vessel to go draw up the water. Now, that's what it says in Mishnah Masechtas Par. Now, but Tanya, we're learning a braisa relating to this. The Behuda Omer, he says, Loihoy Mevint Losses. They didn't bring doors to put on top of the oxen. Elishvam, rather, it was just oxen who had very large torsos, very large stomachs. Now, the children would be sitting on the back of these oxen, and their stomachs, the back of the oxen, would be separating, that the children shouldn't be considered an oil, being leaning over any tumah to then contract that tumah. Now, the Gemara later on will explain why is it that they didn't bring doors. But however, the Gemara concludes the question, Voshvarim, but regarding oxen, the oil, she'enu osib the adam hu, an ox is not a tent, although it's a canopy, it's covering over the ground, but it's not something that was made by man. Yet, v'ketan Rabbi Yehuda, it's brought that in that price, Rabbi Yehuda says, l'hoi mevind losses el shvarim, they didn't have any doors to separate from the tumah, just the oxen themselves were enough. So obviously we see Rabbi Yehuda holds that the spine of the ox is some type of a roof. Now, then you have the space of the animal itself, which is the oil. It's the totality of the oil, which is the spine, which is the roof, and the body of it is the tent. Now, even though that wasn't made by man, we see that he holds that would be sufficient to create a hefsek between the child and the tumah. But didn't we just explain that the holds that oil that's not made through by the adam is not an oil, as the Mishnah says in Masechtas Olos? So it seems to be a contradiction. So that the Gemara answers that Ki Aser Avdim Amr Belazai says, Moider Behuda, you're right, although as we brought in the Mishnah Masechtas Olos, that if it's not made by the adam, it's not an oil, but he does agree, as we're finding in this Braisa, Kimeloi Egrif. If the oil has a whiff the size of a fist, which is more than the tefach, there Rabbi Yehuda would agree that even though it's not made by the Adam, it would still be considered significant and be considered a oil. Now, we find such a discrepancy in halacha that although when it's not made through man, it's not halachically sound, but when it's the size of Malay Egrif that it is, we find a similar thing by a ma'ar, which is a hole that you're using to get light. When it's not made through man, then it's not considered valid to transmit tumah. However, we learn the Mishnah Masechtas Alis and this word Masechtas Bacharis too on Daf Lamed Zayin Beis that this ma'ar that's not made through man, its measurement to let out the tumah is the size of a hole that has a maloy egrif, the size of a fistful. Now Rashi explains that actually this fistful is the size of the fist of Ben Avetiach, who his was so large like the head of a regular person. Now, therefore, when Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah Masechtas Alis that it's not an oil where it's not made by the Adam, that was someone the size of a tefach, which is generally the size that's valid. But since it's not made through man, it's not. But when it is the size of an egrev, that is especially a large one of Ben Avetiach, then is where Rabbi Yehuda would agree, even though it's made not by the Adam, that would be considered oil. Tanya Halachi, similarly, learned the Braisa, the same idea that Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Bashkifin, which are these large boulders, these large rocks that fall out and they by the wind and they make these large holes, these caves from where they were uprooted. When the kikas lom and the cracks in rocks, that he agrees over there that they're going to be considered an oil. So therefore, although they're not made by the Adam, but since they're very large, the Malay Agrif, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that's going to be considered an oil. Now, but then the Gemara asks, based on this, But regarding a door, the Yeshbo, Kame Greifin, there are many fists from the ground up until the door, which would then be valid, even if it's not made by the Adam, to be considered oil according to Behuda. Yet for Gatani, we learned over there in the Braiser, Behuda Imri says, Lohay Mavin Losses Elishvaram, they wouldn't bring doors, only oxen. Now, the Gemara assumes right now that the reason why they wouldn't bring doors would be because it's not the Derech. For an oil to be, a door is usually vertical, not horizontal. So therefore, the door would not work as an oil. Now, the question then would be, that most definitely, oxen cannot be working through the concept of a greifen. Because if you're saying that's not the derech, in other words, why shouldn't the doors work? The doors should work too, because you have kameh greifen, you have many fistful from the ground up until the door. Hence, it should be considered an oil, even though it's not the norm to be like that. Now, if you're saying that it's not the norm, so oxen are also not the norm, and therefore we're basically back to the question. How can we understand Rabbi Yehuda? We said if it's not made by the Adam, it's not an oil. So we wanted to say, but oh, he agrees when there's Kamei Greifin that it is oil. But Dor also has Kamei Greifin. Why over there does he say that that would not be considered an oil to be Masik, and that's why they didn't bring it? So the Gemara gives two answers. Truthfully, of course, it would be considered an oil to be Masik from the ground till the door. But Omar Abaye says, Loihutsuchu lehevit losses. What Rida was saying was they didn't have to bring doors. It wasn't necessary because the ox himself was going to be considered a hefsik as an oil. But of course the door would be because as Menei Grafin, even though it's not the norm, and even if it wasn't Menei Adam, it would be considered oil lahafsik. Another Terzigmer brings Rava Amar. He says, Lohi mevin de losses kol ikr. Now, he says the reason is not because it wasn't oil, as we said. It's just that the reason why they wouldn't bring doors at all is because then the child is not going to be afraid to fall off because he's going to be confident as if he's on a roof or something that's flat and he's able to move around confidently. The child's thought is very confident. Now, Shem, the problem with that is if we're going to give him a door and he has a lot of moving space, he might stick his head or one of his limbs out of where the door is and then he's going to be leaning over possible minds in the sense of tumma. And that's why they would bring only oxen without any doors. Now he's afraid to fall off, so he's holding on to the ox. He's not going to stick his head out from the width of the ox, and therefore he's not going to come to a situation be tumme, and that to become tumme was, as we continue to Amud Beis, bekev atahim with the kever of the depth, which is a reference to any suffix of a kever. And that's why they made it no doors. Not because it wouldn't work, it would work. But we don't want the doors because then he would be overly confident and then he might come to stick his head out and again then the child might become tummy that way. The Gemara says, Tanya Gavah say the Rava, we have a Braisa that says like Rava, they wouldn't bring doors at all. And again, not because it wouldn't work, it has many a grief and it would work, but it's because the child would be overly confident. Now maybe he might stick his head or one of his limbs over, but he might become tame from the tumma of the depth, meaning in other words, a doubtful kever that might be somewhere where they're walking over. Ella, mavin shvarm hamitzim, rather they bring Egyptian oxen, shekrisoyseihin ruchavis, that they have very, very large stomachs. And then the children would sit on top of the oxen. They would have the cubs made out of stone, again, which is, cannot be the kabbal tomo. When they would reach the shalayach, then yardu umolim, then they would go down and fill up the water for all of Yeshua and Agabe, and then they would go back and sit on top of the oxen, thus having fulfilled their mission. Now, however, the Gemara continues to ask, but Vahari Mita, and this is where it comes in relation to our Mishnah, which opened up the parak on the previous staff. But regarding a bed, the Yesh Bakama Greifim, there's many fistfuls going from the ground up until where the bed is. Now, in spite of that, the halacha is, but now we learn in our Mishnah, Rabbi Huda Omer, he says, we would accustom ourselves that we would sleep underneath the bed in front of the elders, and they didn't say anything. So obviously that we see that an oil aroi is not considered an oil, in spite of the fact that, and this is even what was made by man, but since it wasn't made with the intention possibly to be an oil, but even though it has many greifim, it's not going to be an oil, but that contradicts what we were saying until now. We said if there's many fistfuls, even Rabbi Huda would agree, something that's generally not an oil, even if it's not made by man, it's not made with that intention, that would be considered an oil. So why over here is the bed not considered an oil, which contradicts what we're saying in our Mishnah? Now the Gemara answers, Shani Mita, a bed is different. A bed is meant for what's on top of it, that people should sleep on it. It wasn't created with function or purpose for what's beneath it. And therefore, it will not have a designation of a oil for what's underneath it, because that's not what it's meant for. It's meant for what's above. And that's why we'll say in our Mishnah that it's not a contradiction, although there's many a greifim, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees when there's many a greifim, even though it wasn't made with that intention, it will have a halacha of oil. That's, however, if there is utility for what's beneath it, here it's not. It's made actually for what's on top, therefore it will not have a halacha of oil, and that's why he held that you could sleep underneath it, as long as if it's oil aroi, it will not invalidate the oil keva of the sukkah that's on top of it. But the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Shvarm nami. Also regarding what we mentioned regarding the halacha with the paraduma, the oxen also legabon asuyim, they're made for what's on top of them. They're made to carry what's on top. They're not made for anything underneath the oxen. And yet still we say that Yehuda holds that that will be considered a oil to be mafsik between the tumah that's on the ground and the child that's on the top. So that the Gemara says, ki asa ravin, amr belaza, he says, shani shvarm. Oxen are different, that they are meant on some level for what's beneath them. Because Hoyle Meginim Alaraim, since they protect on the shepherds who stick their heads underneath the bellies of the animals, Bechamim Neacham, in the summertime because of the heat, Ubiksham Neacham, in the wintertime because of the rain, so there is function for the animal to protect from what's underneath, and therefore they are considered an oil, whereas a bed is not made for anything beneath it. But then the Gemara asks, if that's the case, Ihachi Mita Nami, but then a bed also has similar type of function in that regards. Because Hoyle Megina Alman Olam Misandom Shatachtel, the bed also protects over the shoes and the sandals that are beneath it. Now, Rashi explains the reason why we speak specifically shoes and sandals is because the Gemara says in Masechtas Baba Basa Daf Nun Chesam Aleph that what is considered the bed of a Talmudic scholar, it's a bed that only has beneath it his shoes in the summertime and his sandals, which are the hard shoes to protect from the elements in the wintertime, where they would put it when they would come to lay down and sleep, they would take off their shoes and put it beneath their bed. However, to put other things beneath one's bed would be something that's disgraceful, because then it would accustom people to come to your bed, which is not a beautiful thing. You don't want people to be coming to a bed, which is a private area, so you don't want to put other things that you store underneath the bed. So shoes are appropriate, but one thing that we see is that it has a similar type of utility, like we say by the oxen, for the shepherds to put their heads beneath it. That's where you consider an oil to be masik. Why should a bed be any worse? Where you put your shoes underneath it, and that should make it enough of an oil to be a problem for a Yehuda, because there's many a greifim. So why does he hold in our Mishnah that one can sleep underneath it and it's not considered an oil? So Elam or Rava, rather Rava says a different difference between the oxen and the bed. Right, the bed is not made for what's beneath it, and therefore it's not an oil and it's not a problem according to Yehuda. But Shani Shvarm, oxen are different. Hayil Vasum, since they are made, and that is their spine is made to be a roof, Lahagin al-Bnei Me'ayin Shalhem, to protect over their intestines. Shenema, like we find in the pasuk in Eve, which says, "Oir ubasur tal bisheni, skin and flesh you have clothed me, uvat samis vegidim teisaychicheni, and that with bones and with sinews you have covered me." So we see that the bones, in which in this regard we're referring to the spine, is used in the terminology of schach, of covering, and that's why the actual body of the ox is a roof and a oil, and that's why it protects, but not because what's beneath it, but actually the body itself. There's the spine is the roof over the intestines, which is the inside, which is the oil. That's what's the oil, and therefore that's what protects the children and is mafsik between the tumah and the child. And if you want, you could say that you're right. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a bed would also be considered an oil. Now, and that's because there's many a grave and there's many fistfuls. However, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda holds this mutter to sleep underneath a bed is because Rabbi Yehuda l'time made. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his another opinion of his, which is mentioned, the Amad that he says, Sukkah diris kevabinan. A sukkah has to be a building of permanence. Now, the havale mita diris aray. However, a bed is considered an impermanent structure. It's temporary in the sense where a bed is moved around. You fold it up when you're not sleeping at nighttime. Now, the sukkah oil keva. However, a sukkah is a permanent structure. Now, a temporary structure cannot nullify, cannot outdo the permanent structure that's above it. To say that there is no designation of sukkah in this space that you're sleeping in. You're sleeping beneath a bed, but you're not really. You're in the permanent structure. You're in a sukkah. Now, there's always greater context that you could view yourself in, but an oil aroi cannot nullify the ol keva and say that you're not in the sukkah. You're in the sukkah, you might also be an oil aroi, but that's not a problem because you're in the sukkah, because since that's temporary, it cannot take away from the kavua, which is what really holds a sukkah has to be, the permanence, to say that you're not in the sukkah, and that's why it's kosher even though you're sleeping underneath the bed. But the Gemara asks, is that really so? That an oil aroi cannot be mevatel ol keva? But for Reb Shimon, but we see in our own Mishnah that Reb Shimon, the amanami sukkah diris kevabin, and where we know from elsewhere, as the Gemara mentions in the first paragraph of Zayim Beis, that he also holds a dira, a sukkah has to be a diris kevat with permanence, and that's why he holds that a sukkah has to have four walls and not three walls. Now, there the Gemara mentions many opinions, amongst them Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and others, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar, Acherim, that they all hold that a sukkah has to be a permanent structure, which they say different ramifications in their own halachic context of what they would require. Now, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says, Lefi darkeinu lamadnu, he says, oh, we understood from Gamliel that someone who sleeps underneath a bed will not fulfill his obligation. And therefore, comes out according to Rabbi Shimon, V'asi oil aroi umevatel oil keva. That means a bed, which is a temporary structure, will be nullifying a permanent structure because the old sukkah has to be. Now, that contradicts what we just said, that Rabbi Yehuda holds it's going to be kosher because the temporary cannot nullify a permanent. That the Gemara answers, but in Baha Pli, this is exactly what they're arguing about. Mar Sava, Rib Shimon holds, Asi Oila Roi Mavatla Keva. He holds that it could, a temporary structure could nullify a permanent structure. Therefore, what you're in a bed area, in the tent of underneath the bed. You're not anymore in the sukkah. Umar Sava, Rib Yudah held that no, Loi Asi Oila Roi Mavatla Keva. He held, as we explained, that a temporary cannot nullify a permanent, and that's why he holds is going to be kosher, and that is the site of the Machlekes that they're arguing in our Mishnah. Now, as we just mentioned, Amar Reb Shimon, it says in our Mishnah, Reb Shimon says that Ma'isi B'Tavi Avda, he brought proof to this, not like a Yehuda, that it's usher to sleep underneath the bed in a sukkah, as we find that there was a story that Lil said regarding his slave Tavi, that he said, look how smart he is, that he's sleeping underneath the bed, because he knows that A, you don't fulfill it underneath the bed, and that he's an Eved, he doesn't have to fulfill it. Now, Tanya learned the Brisa, a different terminology of this story. The Amar Reb Shimon says, "Misichasay shir Rabbi Gamliel," from the talking. Now, sicha generally connotes what's called sichas chulin, mundane talking, not Torah talking, which is idle more in the sense of than in the context of sitting and learning words of Torah. And that he says from his speech, from his conversation, which others would use the term schmoozing of Rabbi Gamliel. Lemanu shnei devarim. We learn two things. Lemanu, first of all, shavadim b'turim nasukah. We learn that slaves are exempt from sukkah, which Tosis asks, we know that because we, as we explained already in the Mishnah, that Avadim have the same halacha as Nashim, and we know that women are exempt from mitzvah sishas mangrama, and that Tosis explains that they had to tell us this chiddush that you shouldn't think that maybe they would be chayiv because of the halacha of Teshu Kain Tedur, that one has to sit in his sukkah as he would in his home, where he has his wife and his slaves over there. That's the chiddush that the Gemara will say later on, the Chav Chesam Abayz, that no, that still one is, the Eved is still exempt. So A, that halacha. And the second chiddush that he's teaching us with his words is that if someone sleeps underneath the bed, he has not fulfilled his chiyuv. And that's why Tavi the Eved, who is not mechuyev, slept underneath the bed so that he could leave more room for everyone else because he's not mechuyev. Now, the Gemara asks on this version, why does it say this interesting terminology of from his shmoozing? Why doesn't it say from his words? So that the Gemara answers that milsa, there's a new halacha, a new chiddush, agav urche, incidentally, like parenthetically, that on our way to teach us these two halachas that we learn from his speech, kamash mulan, as a side, he comes to teach us, he used the vernacular that we could understand another chiddush. And that is, had Reb Shimon used the words midvara from the words of Gamliel, we wouldn't have understood the following halacha, that even sichas chulin, even just mundane talking of a Talmid Chacham, that you have to think about it and you could learn something from it. But now that he said the term misichasa, you learn ki hada amr of acha bar ada. Some say it was amr of acha bar ada amr rav amnuna amr rav. That minayin shafila sichas Talmid Chacham and sicha limrid. How do you know that even the just the schmoozing, the just discussions of Talmudic scholars need to be learned? And that is, you have to listen and you have to think about it, contemplate why he spoke like that. Even though he wasn't teaching you directly words of Torah, where do you know that? Shnem, like it says in the beginning of Sefer Tehillim, it says as a mashal, as a metaphor for a Talmid Chacham, it says, V'alehu, and his leaves, which is a reference to something very light and insignificant in contrast to the whole tree, lo yibol, it will not wither, to say that even the leaves will take on significance. And it comes to teach us that one has to pay attention to even the just the sicha, the talking, not even the teaching of the words of Torah, Talmid Chachamim, because ultimately you'll understand words of Torah that you'll see from the words that he was using. He was coming to teach you a lesson, words of Torah, even in an indirect way, like schmoozing, like Rabbi Gamliel was. He was just making a joke and saying, look how smart he is. But from that, we understood words of Torah to say that sleeping underneath the bed, one will not be fulfilling his chiyuv of sitting in the sukkah. And that's why when Reb Shimon said over this story, he used the words misichasan to teach that even from the regular talking, one has to understand words of Torah, which we understood two halachas from that, what Reb Gamliel had said. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on these halachas of the schach and the sukkah and the halachas of fulfilling one's chiyuv. So the Mishnah tells us, Hasemich sukkasi bekaramita. If someone supports his sukkah with the side posts of a bed, which Rashi says, explains to mean, in other words, an entire bed, then kashera, the sukkah is going to be kasher. And Behudaimer, he argues, he says, Im eina yechayla lamed b'fnei atzma psula. If it cannot stand on its own, then the sukkah is going to be pasla. The Gemara is going to explain the reason for that. As the Gemara asks, my time, Rabbi Yehuda, what is the reason, Rabbi Yehuda, what's wrong with this sukkah using kosher schach? Now you're just supporting it with the frame of a bed. So pliki b'Reb Zeir b'Reb Abba b'Amamu. Chadam, one says, b'mnei she'ein lo kva. Because what happens is now is that the sukkah, which the designation of the term sukkah is always the schach, doesn't have permanence. And the reason is because you're going to be moving it based on the bed. Now, Rabbi Huda goes according to his opinion, which we mentioned earlier in the daf, that he holds a sukkah has to be, a dearest kva has to have permanence. And now that it's being supported by the bed, since a bed is not something that's permanent, it's going to reflect on the sukkah, hence the entire sukkah will not be a dira of kviyas. Chadam, and the other one says, the reason why this sukkah is going to be possible, because you're supporting the schach with something that it itself is mekabel tumma. A bed is a kli, it's mekabel tumma. Now, although with the halacha of invalidity of using something that's mekabel tumma was only said regarding the schach, but since the entire structure of the schach is only being supported with these supports, with the bed, it's as if you made the schach with something itself that was mekabel tumma, and that's why such a sukkah is going to be pasul. Again, unless if the sukkah could stand on its own, then your Yehuda would agree that it's going to be kosher. But if its entire support is coming from this frame, from the bed frame, then it's going to be pasul again, either because that means there's lacking permanence in the sukkah, which is the schach, or because since the support of the schach is something that's mekabel tumma, so then even the sukkah itself is viewed as if it's mekabel tumma and therefore pasul. So the Gemara says, "My Benai, what's the difference between these two different interpretations, and why Rabbi Yehuda says it's going to be possible?" So the Gemara says, "Such a case would be kagain shenatz shfudin shel barz lavasichalim." For example, if someone stuck spits of metal inside the ground and then he put the schach on top of that, so then lamando amalafisha in the kavah, according to the one who says the reason why he says it's possible because it's lacking permanence when it's being held up by the frame of a bed. Hariyesh lekva, what do you mean? Metal spits are stuck into the ground, then there does have permanence to the schach, and it would be kosher. But according to the one that says the problem with the frame of the bed is because it's a keli, and therefore it's a makabal tumma, and hence we view the schach as if it's a makabal tumma, so and it would be possible even with the metal spits, because that's also something that's makabal tumma, and therefore such a sukkah would be possible, and that's the difference between these two different interpretations in Yehuda's opinion. Now, to qualify Yehuda's opinion, the Gemara says, Abaya says, Leishanu, we didn't learn that Yehuda says it's going to be possible when you're supporting the schach with the frame of a bed, is Ela Samach, only if it's being supported by it. Avasichich al gav hamita, but if you just put schach on top of a bed, in other words, you didn't support the schach on the frame of the bed. Rather, you support it by pegs. But the walls of the sukkah are made out of beds on all three sides. And that Abaya says, even Yehuda would agree that kashera, that the sukkah would be kosher, and then Yehuda would not say that it's possible. Now, my time, what's the reason over here that there's a difference? Why, when you're supporting it with the frames, it's going to be possible, but when it's not being supported, it's being supported less by pegs, but the walls are the beds, that then it would be kosher. So, that the Gemara says, Lamanda amalafishan lekva, according to the interpretation that said Yehuda says it's possible when it's being supported by it, because that means that there's lacking permanence in the schach, harish lekva. There is permanence over here for the schach over here, because it's being held up with pegs, nothing to do with the frames of the bed itself. Lamanda amam neshem amid bedev makabla tumma, according to the other interpretation that says the problem is that you're supporting it with something that's makabla tumma, again, hare ein mamid bedev makabla tumma, you're not supporting it with something that's makabla tumma, because the whole invalidation, again, as we said before, for the sukkah is only for the schach. Now, such a case when the walls are made out of beds, but it's being supported by, the schach is being supported by pegs, so neither the schach nor the supports are going to be something that's possible, because neither of them are makabel tumah, it's just the walls. The walls, we have no problem that it's beds as makabel tumah, because the only one that has to be something that grows from the ground and is not makabel tumah is the schach, which is the essential name for the sukkah. And therefore, Rabbi says that's only when it's being supported. But if it's not being supported, then according to both interpretations, even if the walls are beds, such a sukkah would be kosher, even according to Yehuda.